Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adams. On today's economic and political events on Friday, November 1st, 2013. Lots of things to talk about, from L.A. to Pennsylvania to Florida to Canada. So we'll be talking about everything today, but first, let's get to the markets today. A little bit of pressure on gold. Actually had a nice somewhat of a recovery. Still down $7 at $1,316. Silver is down 2 cents today at $21.99. Platinum was up $3 at $14.57. Palladium was also up $3 and $745. It was a very light trading day today for the first day of November. And we have the markets today. You have the USDX today trading a little bit high, well, a lot higher, 0.50 at 87, closing in on 81. Crude oil down a buck, over a buck and a half at 94.69. And we have all the paper markets trading much higher today. You have the Dow up 70 points. It's 15,615. Both the Dow and the S&P traded higher for the week. The NASDAQ actually finished a little lower on the week, up to at 39.22. And the 10-year yield today, 0.08 at 2.62. That's beginning to move up a little bit also. We'll be giving our $10 Indian gold piece. We'll have the drawing right after the break today, the first break today. So you guys are going to have to stay tuned. Until then, good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody. Everything is, well, it's a modest day in the markets. Not too much up, not too much down. Dollar is up, though, dramatically. 0.50 to 80.74. There's the big news, I suppose. 2 days, it jumped about 0.5 yesterday also, if I recall correctly.
Yes, it did.
Yeah, then they have bounced back up above the 80 mark, the 80 line. They'd fallen down for a week down to, we wondered if they were going to break through 79 going downward, but it has instead jumped 1 point in 2 days, if I understand correctly, or thereabouts, and therefore we've seen declines in gold for, I don't know, what, $20 or something over the course of the 2 days?
Yeah, we had a little bit of a pulling back, but I kind of expected it. We had options expirations at the end of last week, along with the FOMC meetings. This week, you're always going to find pressure. going into the new month, and of course all the distractions that they do create along with Obamacare. Again, as I mentioned, there was light trading today in the market, so they were able to weasel out 80 points on the Dow, and so everybody's going home feeling good this weekend. So lots of candy in their bellies, a lot of sugar highs out there, so from trick-or-treating last night. So they had to follow it through on today. So even the Dow got a little bit of a sugar high today.
Well, on behalf of the American Dental Association, I want to thank all of you for celebrating Thanksgiving. What else?
Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving. Halloween.
Halloween.
I don't know what I'm thinking of. Maybe see too much sugar for me too. You get too much sugar. I also celebrated something, whatever it was yesterday, I celebrated it, just like I celebrate today, and I'll celebrate tomorrow, because, well, I'm just kind of celebratory in that matter, if you understand what I'm saying, Melody, and just got that natural high going on. You know what I'm talking about? So what's next?
Oh, brother.
Oh,
hey,
brother.
Excitement out at the L.A. airport.
Uh-huh.
They're a gunman. Killed a TSA officer before he was taken into custody, and it is just amazing all the all this misinformation. It happened 9:30 this morning Pacific time. Didn't see much, which would have been 12:30 here in the Eastern Standard Time, and I caught little bits and pieces of it on CNBC, and of course there was all kinds of shooting to. Accounts of everyone being killed, to the gunman being killed, to you know, so the story has yet to but it's interesting, a couple of things that I took note in the reporting, and again it's a bad situation, it's a sad situation, and it's unfortunate, and whenever things like this happen, I continue to remember, wasn't it Hillary Clinton, you can't let a situation.
You can't let a crisis go to waste. A crisis is a terrible thing to waste. That was her and Rahm Emanuel. And they understand, you see one of these problems, and then you try to leverage it. You try to exploit it. One of the first things about it, there's over 300 million people in this country. All right? We hear about many of the shootings. I won't say we hear about every one of them on a national basis, but we hear about a lot of them on a national basis, and yet, out of 300 million people, how many shootings do you suppose you might expect? You know, we get, okay, somebody got shot. On a statistical basis, the fact that somebody got shot today is not that big a deal. Right? It happens. This is what happens. There's people who got hit in the head with a rock today. There's probably a few people even got shot with bows and arrows. You understand? The only thing we hear about what we hear about is, oh my gosh, somebody's shooting. What's the big question at the LA airport? What's the big question about this shooting? What do you suppose will be the big question, at least initially, about this shooting?
Well, I've already heard them when they did the news conference, they did talk about assault rifle. Was the first thing that I caught interesting. And also, what I didn't understand is someone made a comment that this person was going around asking if they were TSA. Can't mistake a TSA agent.
Not necessarily. There might be undercover TSA agents hanging around the airport.
But if you're signaling TSA agents, there's plenty of them in uniform that proudly display TSA.
Yeah, but here's the
question.
Right
at the point where he was at.
He may have been looking for undercover TSA agents, and that's a concept that's not impossible. I don't know if it's true or false or crazy or what it is. I don't know. It's not impossible that TSA has agents who are not wearing uniforms. But the next question that will be interesting. Yeah, we don't know if it's true or false. It's speculation and more speculation. Was the shooter ever employed by TSA? Was he employed by the airport? All right, what's his gripe with TSA? It'll be interesting to see. Is this another lone gunman who's just decided to take out his wrath on some innocent people? Is this someone who is going postal? who's been there, worked there, didn't want any more to do with it, got fed up for whatever reason, and now he's been, you know, he's undoubtedly unbalanced. There's no question. I mean, you can't argue that this guy's mentally hitting on all eight cylinders. But did the guy, was the guy a former employee? That will be an important question. It'll make a difference. We'll see. We'll find out over the course of the next hours. You know, should know by the end of the day, certainly by tomorrow.
I can't imagine. Not only were there injuries from the weapon, but there was other injuries. Well, I'm assuming that there people were knocked over, ran over, and fell down escalators or whatever, trying to, you know, get away from the situation. That's the only other type of other injuries that I could think of.
You know what that means, don't you? We're going to have to outlaw escalators now. We're going to have a national, what will it be, a National Escalator Defense Authorization Act to prevent people from falling down escalators. The government will be here to help us, and they'll pass a law. And it may be, if anybody dies in an elevator, before long we may have to pass a law to outlaw elevators, too. And maybe automobiles, if anyone dies from automobiles. And there's no end to what we may have to outlaw for public safety. What else do we have, Melody?
Oh, like I said, it was a quiet day in trading today. And, so there just wasn't a lot going on in the markets. You have something about NSA spying.
Halted spying. Yeah. Here's something from Reuters. It says Obama halted NSA spying on IMF and World Bank headquarters. Yay! President Barack Obama has ordered the National Security Agency to stop eavesdropping on the headquarters of the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank as part of a review of intelligence gathering activities. The order, this executive order, is the latest move by the White House to demonstrate that it is willing to curb at least some surveillance in the wake of leaks by former NSA contractor Edward Snowden of the programs that collect huge quantities of data on U.S. adversaries and U.S. allies and American citizens. So the point is, Obama will no longer be spying on the International Monetary Fund or on the World Bank, but he'll still be spying on you and me, won't he, ladies and gentlemen? Oh, there's a payphone. There's also a payphone at a diner on Highway 47 that's been taken off the spy list. So you can see that the push for freedom is just breaking out at the Obama administration. But seriously, folks, I'd like to see a list of the people who aren't being spied on. All right? We've got the NSA spying on almost everybody, but not everybody. It would be very interesting to see who is not on the list. Because I'm going to make you bet the people not on the list are exactly the people that Americans need to keep an eye on. For example, I'll bet that members of Congress and the Senate, perhaps even their families, are deleted from the NSA spy list. I suspect this might be true because if Congress and the Senate were being spied on by the NSA, I'd expect them to be screaming mad when Eric Snowden's NSA spying revelations were made public. The fact that Congress didn't bellow with rage, it's not proof, but it's decent evidence that the Congress already knew that they were exempt from being spied on. So, we don't need to spy on Congress because they're the good guys who gave us the Patriot Act, the National Defense Authorization Act, Obamacare, and the growing police state. They're the guys who don't have enough respect for you and me to even read the legislation they vote for against. So, you know we can trust them, but they know they can't trust us, don't they? And that's why Congress needs to spy on all the rest of us peons out here in Radio Land. They need to find out which of us really understands what Congress is really up to, don't they? What?
I kind of disagree with you. I bet they do spy on Congress and the Senate, because that's how they find out what these skeletons are that they probably use against them in order to get certain legislation. I'm not saying that's true, but it's a possibility.
Well, I don't know what the truth of the matter is.
But I'll guarantee you who isn't spied on is the NSA employees, the CIA employees, the FBI employees, all the snooping agencies. Probably don't get spied at least the management or the ones, maybe the little low mailroom people might, but I don't know if they can distinguish, you know, who's who and what's what when you're doing an overall population or whatever. But I don't know if you're.
I actually expect that the government, the NSA, for example, I think it probably spends more energy spying on government employees than it does spying on the American people. What they do spying on you and me and the other people in the audience is pretty much just a random event. Right? It's the sort of thing, it's superficial. I don't doubt it's taken place and I don't applaud it, but I suspect it's superficial. Because in the end, we don't really know anything that can hurt the government. I can sit here and espouse different opinions that may be critical of the government, but it's not causing them any damage. Now, Edward Snowden, on the other hand, he knew some stuff. And he, with his revelations on spying, for example, his whistleblowing activity, has just put an enormous crunch on the government. He's the guy they're worried about. They're not worried about me. I'm an annoyance. People like Snowden pose the real threat because they have access to real information. So I'm going to guess that the people who actually work for the government, most of them are probably under more surveillance. I would suspect they're under at least as much surveillance as you and I, and probably more. At the top of the government, on the other hand, you talk about Congress, you talk about the White House, you talk about a handful of other positions, Federal Reserve. I'm going to bet they're not spying on those people, or at least if they are, you're going to have to dig very, very deep to find. That was even beyond Snowden's capacity to unearth. Who spies on the spies? There's the question. So, any case, we'll find out one of these days, as soon as we get another whistleblower. Any more whistleblowers out there? Anybody got some more information on spies or spying or something you'd like to reveal? Give us a call. What's our phone number, Melody?
Not unless you want to live in Russia.
Russia's probably not. Russia's not necessarily
Russia's probably
bad.
Probably pretty nice. I think the St. Petersburg is the most expensive city in the world to live.
Is that right?
So, I believe so. I think something like that crosses my mind. But, very expensive. Very. So. Anyway,
what if you don't drink vodka? Then what? Then it's probably one of the more modestly priced cities. You stay away from the vodka, then the prices probably aren't all that high. What's next?
Oh,
half until we're going to take a break.
Enough is enough.
Enough is enough.
Enough is enough.
Oh, poor Ron Paul. Yeah, or Rand
Paul. Paul.
It's time to end the secrecy at the Federal Reserve. Rand Paul is just complaining that the Federal Reserve has been operating in secrecy for years. Harry Reid has been complaining and trying to get a Senator Harry Reid trying to get an audit of the Federal Reserve since 1995 without success. Ron Paul has tried to do so, hasn't happened. Rand Paul has a bill in the Senate with 27 co-sponsors from both parties to audit the Fed. In the House, there's a similar bill with 100 co-sponsors. We will watch and see if this passes. But Federal Reserve, according to the article I'm reading from, they say Federal Reserve might be the most secretive institution in our nation's history. For decades, federal officials, politicians, and various experts have insisted that such secrecy was integral to its independence and therefore its effectiveness. What we're going to do here is we're going to wind up taking a break before we can get into this a little deeper. But what we're going to talk about when we get back, is there really a valid justification for the Federal Reserve to operate under such incredible secrecy? You know, there hasn't been a real audit that's at least been made publicly available of the gold that's allegedly held by the Federal Reserve. It hasn't been audited since 1953, 60 years. You understand that? We don't know how much gold is really there. They claim 8,200 tons, but nobody, we certainly don't know. Perhaps we'll get into this a little deeper when we return. Going to take a break. Be right back. Please stay tuned. Alfred Addis, Melody Cedarstrom, Financial Survival.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate in those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Or take your chances with the bad boys. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here on Financial Survival with co-host Melody Cedarstrom. Programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody? Melody?
Well, we're ready for the... Are you there?
Yes, I am. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, all right. What about Frank? Is he here?
Hey, we're ready for the drawing. Let's get on with this. We have Carla on the line.
Hello.
Hello, Carla.
Go ahead, Al.
How are you?
Just fine.
Go ahead and draw a name for the winner of a Mint State 62 $10 Indian gold piece valued at about $900.
Okay, winner number one. We have Charles from Alvarado, Texas.
All righty. Well, congratulations, Charles. You just won a Mint State 60.
Hello?
Yes, Melody, you're...
And we have winner number two.
Yes.
Is Karen from Bandera, Texas.
Well, good news for Texas. I still, I don't understand. I thought I bribed you $5, Carla, to see that I want one of those.
Better luck next time.
Well, at least you got the right state. You got the right state. You got Texas around, not me, but Texas. So, yeah. All right. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Carla. Bye-bye.
All right. Two people. Karen, I believe she said. Well, Charles and Karen, is that right?
That is correct.
And both down here in Texas.
That is correct.
All right. Well, Melody, I assume you'll be calling them shortly after the program and confirming or whatever you got to do with these people. And congratulations.
Absolutely. Congratulations, folks.
Yep.
And moving right along, we do have a...
We have another dropout or something, apparently, because I can't hear you, Melody.
All righty. We have a caller, Ivan.
All right, Ivan, are you there?
Hello. Yes, I am.
Hello. Ivan.
How are you doing, both
good,
of you?
Good,
good. Good. My question is regarding this latest Israeli attack on Syria, which they bombed by Latakia, a military base. And my question is there possibility that they are trying to instigate Syria into a war by them retaliating and maybe shooting down the planes or missiles or whatever?
And, I don't doubt that it's a possibility. I don't doubt that it's a possibility. And I know that President Assad in Syria has been, he's been credited by some people over the past few months for resisting these provocations. He's understood them earlier this year. He's apparently understood that these were attempts to get him to do something that could then be used as justification for further attacks by Israel, maybe the United States, who knows. But he's kept his cool, and how long they can continue to do that remains to be seen. But who knows? Is it Israel's intent to cause Syria to overreact or to react at all? Or was Israel just content to bomb a military base and be done with it? Another one of those questions that we can't give an answer to. We don't know. We'd have to call, the Knesset to find out.
I guess that's the only way you'll find out what's in their mind. But the other thing could be the possibility of a false flag chemical attack from Syria into Israel by the rebels.
Well, yeah.
The false flag and creating...
Public anger, sentiment, inclination to go, what happened? Why did we ever invade Afghanistan? Why did we invade Iraq?
Well,
it was essentially a false flag, provocation.
That's correct. And the other thing is that for protection of Israel itself, because you had Saddam Hussein there were a couple of reasons. One, Saddam Hussein wanted to get out of the petrodollars, okay?
Right on.
Secondly, he was strong anti-Israeli. And third, certainly they had oil, just like Iran, same scenario, which might play out. So that's why I attacked Iraq in order to neutralize their potential in all three areas, maybe oil, anti-Israelism, or going on a non-petrodollar currency, which
That was the main issue from my perspective. I'll never know what the truth absolutely was, but from my perspective, primary reason for invading Iraq was because Saddam Hussein had declared that he was going to start selling his Iraqi crude oil for euros rather than dollars. And once he did that, he threatened the dollar's standing as the world reserve currency. At the time, the dollar was posted, it was pegged about 1.25 on the dollar index, on the U.S. dollar index, or excuse me, 125 on the U.S. dollar index, and now it's down in the neighborhood of 80. It's lost a third of its value, and it's almost certainly because Saddam Hussein stopped buying or stopped selling crude oil for dollars. That was probably the principal cause of a third of the dollar's loss of value in the over the last 10, 12 years. So they attacked, but it was too late. It was too late, and it didn't really stop. The dollar continued to degrade, and a lot of, you know, when the history books are written, what do you think the world is going to say about Saddam Hussein? Everyone in this country certainly regards him as a villain. Right? Most people, I won't say everyone, but the vast majority, Saddam Hussein is a villain. What do you think, Yvonne? What do you think will be history's verdict on Saddam Hussein?
Well, he was, I think, as far as Christianity, he protected Christians against the Islamic extremists, maybe Al-Qaeda or Al-Nusra or whatever. I think he was more secular as far as a ruler.
Yeah.
He certainly was. Some countries do need what they call, quote-unquote, benevolent dictatorships. For example, Italy is another one, which requires a benevolent dictator. And there are many countries thrive under that type of... The same thing would happen in Libya. Under Gaddafi, again, people were thriving well. They had... cheap gas, there was money being distributed, you know, or shared with the people in farming or giving houses away to the new couples who were married and so on. So, and gas was like 14 cents a gallon.
I understand. And he gave newlyweds something like $25,000 or $50,000 when they just by being married, they would automatically receive, and I don't remember the number, $25,000, $50,000, something like that. Plus, they got a new home, and the cost of the home was in direct proportion to what they earned. They had to pay 10% of their monthly income. That was their mortgage payment, and after 20 years, they owned the home outright. I believe it was 20 years.
Yeah.
Huh? A heck of
I
deal.
Agree.
I mean, he was... And he took Libya from the status of the most impoverished country in Africa, huh? Up to the wealthiest in his lifetime in terms of per capita income. I mean, Gaddafi was a blessing for the Libyan people. I won't argue that everybody was, I won't argue that Gaddafi was perfect. I won't argue that he was a saint. I'm not going to make that. But you got to sit back and say, look, this guy did some real good, and the people should have been generally pleased with his performance and thankful to have had him there, and yet we ran him off as if he was some sort of a villain.
Yeah. Now, this is the problem that, again, he threatened the banksters, okay, as far as not having an IMF loans and all that stuff, whichever
has. You're right, though. Yeah. You're right. Gaddafi's main offense was that he threatened the global monetary system. He tried to create a pan-African currency that would be backed by gold. That was his intent. Ha ha. Listen, I guarantee you, if you want to talk about... committing suicide, you know, get yourself in a, if you want to commit suicide, just get yourself elected to a public office where you can advocate a gold-based currency. See how long you last.
Get rid of Federal Reserve and you'll be all set. That's what happened to JFK, okay?
Well, I understand. He started, that may have been one of the reasons
One of the reasons, yes, because he did want to get rid of Federal Reserve. But
what do you think the history of the world would be? Yvonne, what do you think the history of the world would be if we could get accurate reports on what really happened? How much of history do you suppose is that we know and believe to be true? How much do you suppose is accurate, and how much do you suppose is just some sort of a fictional story? What do you think the percentages are?
Well, As you know, the victors write the history, so I would say the percentage is probably 20 plus, 80 and minus, you know.
Yeah, I understand.
10 or 1090, you know.
Yeah, well, one of those things we can look forward to learning. Perhaps we need a few more whistleblowers like Edward Snowden, and we may actually find out what world history is really all about. Yvonne, I want to thank you for your call. We're going to move on here and see if we got...
Okay.
Very much.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye. You know, we talked... Melody, do you have something you want to bring in right now? Apparently not.
No, absolutely not. It was a great conversation, and there is so much that is so distorted, and people really don't know the truth on how these countries come about. And, I mean, heck, even our own government puts these politicians, or I don't know if you want to call them politicians, but the leaders of these countries in place, and then after so many years when they no longer serve a purpose, and I believe that was what they basically did to Gaddafi. And
we didn't put Gaddafi in place, but we did put Saddam Hussein in place.
Saddam Hussein,
Karzai in place over in.
Maybe I was thinking of Karzai.
Afghanistan. Excuse me. We build them up and we knock them down. Yeah. It's a dangerous business. If you ever start your own country, Melody. And the government comes along, and if you get it, and they say, we're going to make you the queen of this new country, probably be a good idea to take a pass on that. Because the ones the government builds up are also the ones the government knocks down. So if you want to live to a ripe old age, probably shouldn't be appointed by the federal government to be a chief official for some foreign country. What else do we have, Melody? You know, we talked about the Federal Reserve when we took a break when we took the earlier break, and the question is whether the Federal Reserve should be allowed to continue to operate in secrecy, or whether it should be at least audited and compel its operations to be made more transparent to the American people. The experts have insisted that such secrecy was integral to the independence and therefore effectiveness of the Federal Reserve system. And I look at it and I said, look, the Federal Reserve has two objectives imposed by law. It's supposed to maintain stable value for the dollar, and it's also supposed to maintain full employment. Now, given that the dollar has lost 95% or more of its value since 1971 to inflation, and given that the current unemployment rate may be as high as 23%, at least according to John Williams at shadowstats.com, it's hard to argue that the Federal Reserve, even cloaked in secrecy, has been particularly effective at achieving its legally mandated objectives over the past 40 or 50 years. So, do you believe that the Federal Reserve must be able to operate in secrecy in order to be effective? Does that make sense to you, Melody?
Huh? Not to me, but I guess to...
That's their argument. I mean, but they haven't been effective, or at least they haven't been effective at doing what they are legally mandated to do. It may be they're effective at doing other things, but if they're effective at doing things other than what their legal mandates call for, what are these other things? Are they just good deeds for extra credit? Or, if they're not legally mandated, does it follow that they are criminal acts? You know, if the and speaking of in terms of the Fed's need for independence, how can the Fed be independent from the people? In other words, we don't get to see what the Fed is doing, and yet the people remain dependent on the Federal Reserve. Depending on what the Federal Reserve does in terms of the supply of money, in terms of the interest rate, guess what? We are all affected. You and I are all, to greater or lesser degree, dependent on whatever they're doing at the Federal Reserve, and the Fed says they got to be independent from us, but we have to remain dependent on them. I don't trust the Federal Reserve system any more than the NSA trusts the American people. I see no reason why the Federal Reserve should be able to operate in secrecy. The fact that it insists on operating in secrecy becomes evidence that the Federal Reserve is up to something that may be of a criminal or perhaps even treasonous nature. I think we should audit them. Melody, what do you think?
Absolutely. And how many times have you heard a friend or a family member say, well, I don't care what they do. I don't do anything wrong. They can see whatever I do. And that's exactly how the Fed should be. If they're not doing anything wrong, let the American people see.
Mm-hmm. I agree. You know, they make the police will tell you all the time, got nothing to hide, you got nothing to worry about.
Got nothing to hide, yep.
And they believe that applies to us, but it doesn't apply to the government. I'm Alfred Addisk. This is Financial Survival. I'm here with Melody Cederstrom. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Stress, financial obligations, or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at the 3Ws.thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addisk here on Financial Survival with co-host Melody Cederstrom. The program's brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. And let's start with an article here from on South Africa, and the entitled South Africa, Existing Gold and Platinum Mines Will Close. That says Andy Jackson. What they're talking about, they go through a little bit. The article's by Henry Bonner at Sprott Global. And he says in part, look, South Africa mining industry is being racked with strikes once again. Since police cracked down on striking miners at the Marikana mine, which left 34 people dead, strikes and violence have continued to erupt at South African mines. All right, so we understand there is political instability. There's even racial instability down there in South Africa. There is a new political party, National Union of Mine Workers, recently called South Africa a white man's economy with no benefits for poor black mine workers. That's the kind of allegation that maybe true, maybe not so true, but it's certainly inflammatory. All right, and it points toward political instability in South Africa. Now, political instability by itself is not necessarily a bad thing well, I won't say it's a, not necessarily a bad thing, but it's not necessarily a lethal problem in this regard. As long as there's gold under the ground and it and you can make money getting the gold out of the ground, the mines are going to continue to function. It's all a question. There may be additional costs. There may be additional payoffs. You may have to pay more for security. There's no telling what may what additional costs may be imposed. But nevertheless, as long as there's gold in the ground, somebody's going to find a way to get it out. So these mines aren't going to end. But they go on to talk about a couple of three. There are three significant mines. Two of them are new that are open pit mines for platinum in particular. And based on that, they're predicting that the supply of platinum is going to increase significantly over the course of the next several years. And what that implies is that assuming that demand for platinum remains more or less stable, if the supply of platinum is going to increase, then we can assume that over the next decade, the price of platinum will probably remain stable or tend to go down. Now, I'm not saying it won't go up, all right, which may sound contradictory, but it may go up, but not as much as you would otherwise expect. All right, when the world and when inflation causes prices of everything to go up 30%, platinum might only go up 15%, simply because the supply is increasing. And they have new mines, and these open pit mines don't require as many miners. They can rely on equipment rather than individuals crawling through tunnels 4,000 feet deep in the ground. In theory, the prospect for getting more platinum out of South Africa is good, but it also implies price of platinum may go down. Now, but the problem they've got, well, not the problem, they go on to say, on the gold side, there hasn't been anything similar discovered. They've got two new platinum resources that are monstrous and likely to last for decades into the future. On the gold side, there hasn't been anything similar discovered. And the author of this article, Andy, what was his name? I was going to say Andy Williams. No, it's Henry Bond. Andy Jackson was the not Andy Williams. He wasn't singing. He was just making statements. He says on the gold side there hasn't been anything similar discovered, and I don't think that there will be, because the gold deposits are of a different nature. For the gold industry, I would foresee a steady decline over the coming years. And what he's saying is there's going to be less and less gold mined out of the ground in the coming years. There's reason to believe they've pretty much identified most of the major gold strikes that are accessible with modern technology. It's unlikely they're going to find major gold fields in the foreseeable future. And the implication is the supply of new gold, freshly mined out of the ground, is not likely to increase over coming years. And if the supply is not going to increase and the demand stays steady or grows, it's just another one of those fundamental reasons to believe that the price of gold is going to increase dramatically, well, at least significantly and steadily over the next decade, two decades, however long it goes. Unless people lose their appetite for gold, if the supply is diminishing, then, you know, it just follows that the price has to go up. Got another one here. Two interesting and contrasting articles. One is budget deficit in U.S. narrows to a five-year low on record revenue. This is from Bloomberg. All right, the deficit is falling. The deficit is the how much we spend, the government spends, as compared to how much the government takes in terms of revenue. We've been running extremely high revenue deficits. 2008, in matter of fact, in 2012, we had a $1.09 trillion deficit in 2012. But this year, it's down to $680 billion. That's really extraordinary progress, and the government has to be, you got to give them credit for this. You have to say, listen, this is remarkable. They're doing something positive here, and it's perhaps more than we might have expected. They have reduced the deficit, assuming we can count on their numbers being accurate and reliable. The deficit's fallen by 35-40% over the last year. That's pretty good. All right, you got to give them credit for it. They attribute this to stronger hiring and reduced unemployment. But again, are the unemployment numbers real? And they also claim that they've had higher payroll taxes. They're cutting costs through sequestration and so on. The point here is that the government appears to be doing something good. They appear to be showing us evidence of fiscal responsibility. They talk at least about a pro-jobs budget, and that's that pro-jobs budget, in my opinion, is nonsense. I don't believe in that. The issue is, you know, how are we going to have more jobs in this country if we don't restore tariffs? How can we have a pro-jobs budget in government? They've done a good thing by cutting the deficit, but they understand they've got to generate more jobs. What kind of jobs are we going to have? Flipping hamburgers? Painting people's fingernails and toenails? Barbershop work? There's only so much service work that's available in the world. There's only so much that can be afforded. Real productive jobs ultimately depend on producing something tangible. You've got to produce some iron ore. You've got to produce some petroleum. You've got to produce an automobile or a computer or a washing machine. You've got to make something tangible, and that's where the wealth really flows from. And the rest of it is more or less derivative. Right? Service work depends. First, somebody before you can hire a masseuse to give you a back rub, you've got to produce something. You've got to produce something tangible, something the world really wants. That's, from my perspective, that's the core of the economy. And the government claims they're going to have pro-jobs budgets, and I think that's nonsense. They can't have more jobs in this country unless they first restore higher tariffs, compel industries to relocate back into this country that had formerly taken off to China or India or some other third world country. With high tariffs, they can't sell into this country unless they build in this country, bring the factories back, bring the jobs back. That would be a pro-job budget and a pro-job policy. In terms of the deficit, they are correctly praised for having cut the deficit from over $1 trillion to $680 billion. The issue, though, is not the deficit. The issue is rather the total size of the national debt, especially in relationship to the gross domestic product. Now, the deficit last year, even though it was reduced for this last fiscal year, it was significantly reduced, it's still 4.1% of the gross domestic product. That means the total national debt as a percentage of gross domestic product has increased by another 4% this last year. That's not cause for celebration. It's good news that the deficit has been dramatically reduced, but the debt has at the same time increased, and the debt is the real issue. Now, they're celebrating, hooray, we knocked the deficit down, they're right, that's good news, but here's another article from RARE, and it's entitled $1.1 million Taxpayer Share of the American Debt. Each U.S. taxpayer now has a federal debt liability of $1.1 million, and it's rising. The public tends to focus on the total national debt, which just passed the $17 trillion mark. Yeah, according to some sources. Truth is, it's probably up over $200 trillion, including unfunded liabilities. But nevertheless, it focused on the national debt, just passed the $17 trillion mark, up from $10.6 trillion when President Obama took office. That means the national debt is up over 65% in 5 years. But that figure pales in comparison to the federal government's long-term unfunded liabilities, money the government is obligated to pay over and above the revenue it is estimated to receive. They go on and do some more calculations. And the point of all of this is that here's an article that their calculations indicate that the average taxpayer's share of the national debt is now $1.1 million. We've done similar calculations on the program where I just divide it out in terms of every man, woman, and child in this country. And we've calculated to something like $250,000 for every man, woman, and child, depending on what numbers you use for the size of the national debt. The debt can't be paid. That's the real point here. On the one hand, we have an article that say, hooray, we've cut the deficit by perhaps 40% the last year. That's good. But on the other hand, we see that the average taxpayer's share of the national debt is $1.1 million right now. That's not good. That's bad. It's foundation for arguing that the American people are not the richest people on the face of the earth. We are arguably the poorest in terms of net worth. Yeah, we're living well, we're eating well, most of us, and the rest of that sort of thing. We get by, we got the car and the TV and the rest of that sort of thing, and we are the envy of much of the world, but we are so deep in debt that if you actually calculate our net worth, we are a nation of bankrupts. We owe more than we can pay. We owe more than we have. And if that debt has to be paid, we're going to have to admit that we're bankrupt. We have a negative net worth. There are people living in the Kalahari who have nothing but a bowl, a wooden bowl and a stick or a spear and a loincloth and the rest of that. Technically, they're in the black. Their net worth is positive. It's not much. It's $5, $10, 20 bucks a piece. I don't know what it's worth. It's not much, but they're in the black. We're in the red. On average, in this country, we're in the red. It's the kind of perspective that no one enjoys looking at. No one, I don't even enjoy talking about it. But it seems that this is the sort of insight that people need to get in their mind in order to deal with that, whatever problems we may have in the future. You have to. We can't just dance around and say we're the wealthiest nation on earth. A lot of people believe that. It's simply not true anymore, at least not in terms of the net worth of the American people. It's just not true. And we have to step back from these kinds of misstatements and misinformation and even myths, which are pleasing and comfortable and the sort of thing that they, yay, we're number one. No, we're the only thing we're number one at is we're the world's biggest debtor nation at this time. And we aren't going to solve the problems that are facing us until we look at them. And we look at them objectively and say, oh, holy cow, I thought we were doing well. This is like opening up the checkbook and you think you've got $10,000 in your checking account and you find out you're overdrawn by $500. You say, boy, that was not fun. I didn't like looking in the checkbook. Yeah, I know, but still, you've got to look in the checkbook or tomorrow you're going to be overdrawn by $1,500. We have to actually read the checkbook and see what the numbers are. And if we do, then we can begin to say, what has happened? Who was responsible for the overdraft in the checking account? What happened to the $10,000 I thought I had there? Was it my mistake? Was it my wife's mistake? What's happened to our money? You can't resolve the problem until you look at it. As unpleasant as the problems may be, we do have to take a look at them from time to time. I'm Alfred Addis. This is Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. I'll be back with Melody on Monday. Have a good weekend. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad. Money, money, always funny.